from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cufflinks.
Hello and welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks, another episode on the other side of 50. I feel like it's a brave new world we're going into.
Closer to two zeros than one.
It's like a new beginning.
Wait, we have to start anew?
Yeah, we're just starting over. Oh. We're just starting this whole thing over. I'm here, of course, with Dusty Rhodes, and we've been doing a lot of work together, Dusty, with more in our future. This past weekend was a challenging one, I think, in a lot of ways, but was also a very good one in some other ways. The really bright note in the weekend, I think, was the women's game.
Yes.
Which we both had the pleasure to commentate on. You did most of the commentating. I did just kind of the here's what's happening for those of you who aren't watching carefully.
Yeah.
And then we were also, of course, joined by Rosie Anyo, who I think did a fantastic job, even though there are challenges to having three people in a booth.
Yes. Considering I had never done a game with three people in the booth before, and she had never done commentating before, and
I'm me.
Yes, which means you take up more space than a lot of the other play-by-play announcers.
I take up some room. I'm and trying to get better at
it. We had never tried to jam that many people in that particular press box before.
Yeah.
But I think as the game went on, we sort of figured out what we were doing and how to involve her well. I mean, she had a lot of useful insight into the game,
Well
as the players specifically, and sort of where they had played before, what their roles were. So even in between points and when we had breaks, she was giving us info on it. And it was good. I was happy to have her there, and I feel like she could do my job instead of me as a color commentator. So
how about she could do your job along with you?
Well,
at different games.
A different game. Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, the idea of working with three people in a booth is really interesting. I think you can give a little more time to think of what you're going to say,
yep,
and then sort it out, and then give a better back and forth sometimes. And particularly in that game, there were very few stoppages. So there was a lot of space to fill. There were fewer timeouts called. There were the timing between pulls was very quick.
It moved.
Which I was very pleased to see, considering we didn't have observers or refs.
Yeah.
It was on the players to do that. And sometimes in club games, without observers, they take a lot of time in between points.
It can drag a little bit.
Yeah. And in this one, it kept moving the whole time.
Very impressed with the tempo of the game. And I think that, you know, yes, the three-person thing was an interesting experiment. I think it worked well at some occasions, though. It's much like when we had three people on Cleats and Cufflinks. When we had David.
I don't know why you're going to hear it. He's the same size as the rest of us.
I don't know. This is just a tight.
Like
we made him sit on the floor. That was
always. It's not like we're particularly tall.
That's why it was awkward.
Just average sized dudes.
Very average. Almost one Heckman. So let's. We need to talk about this women's game. So let's crack open a tasty beverage from our sponsor for the podcast, Heavy Seas Brewing Company from down in Baltimore, Maryland.
And we're going half pours on this with the double cannon. We're drinking responsibly.
Yeah.
So when you add that up, it comes out to one cannon per person.
We each get a cannon, which is what you were always promised on this show, and I'm surprised you waited this long to request it be fulfilled. Your cannon is here.
You know, they do... their loose cannon, their normal IPA, not the double cannon, they've now put in cans.
Ooh.
And the lettering on the outside emphasizes the can in cannon.
Oh, I love that.
Which I really appreciate.
That's fantastic.
And we'll do as I
yeah, we're gonna do our bottle
done,
read.
Done a little bottle
Let's
read
do
here.
Our bottle read.
Hop aromas blast out of this flavor explosion. Massively dry hop with a balanced malt sweetness. This irresistible force showcases the power of bringing in the extra artillery.
Oh yeah, you can smell that is happening in there.
You can smell the artillery.
You can
is what you're
saying? It smells like gunpowder. It's very odd. Not sure how they did that.
Now you're just making things up. It smells like hop.
It does smell. It just smells totally like hop. Tastes like hop. Very good. Oh, I like that. That's much more drinkable than I expected it to be for all its potency.
Great. We should mention that you are into the dad beers more than I am.
I'm very into dad beers. I like beer that, you know, give me a 2% alcohol beer in a can. And I'm pretty happy. Basically, I guess I'm just saying I just want calories.
Right, and I tend to go for the I want a lot of beer immediately.
Yeah.
And then I want to slow down.
And then you got to pace up. So. Which, of course, brings us to the point. We're drinking our half beers today because we are enjoying our Heavy Seas beer responsibly. And we recommend that you do the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about this game.
Love to.
What a game.
It was a fantastic game.
What a game.
And no offense to the other MLU games on the weekend, but I would tag this as the game of the week.
I got to be honest. I think you're right. I think you're right. And we had some players of the week in there. I'll say this. So for those who maybe missed this or didn't get a chance to watch it, it is available online. You can go watch it. There are also highlights if you like the Reader's Digest version.
I don't, which but you other clearly people do. Don't.
Dusty's like, can I watch this game from four different angles over and over?
Yes, just to make sure. That would be exactly what I would like.
We'll get there someday. The game is available, though. You can go watch it. But for those who weren't aware, basically we took some of the best female Ultimate players up in the Boston area from four different club teams, largely Brute Squad.
Yep.
A fantastic team, obviously, storied history, championships won. Then also the other teams were Slow White, Siege, and...
Wild card.
Wow, it's always wild card that slips. And they basically gathered up a roster of women and divided them. And they took them a while actually to figure out how they wanted to divide these teams. And they landed on old versus young.
And they ended up with team names Old School and New School, which I, during the course of the game, figured out.
Yeah, by about the second quarter, you were...
I kept trying to call them just old and young, old, and I knew that wasn't the correct thing.
Yeah, and or Navy.
But Navy and New, N and N, I got the little mnemonic going there.
That was what got it.
It helped.
That was what got it through. Yeah, I think by the end of the game, we were more or less consistent.
I mean, we knew which team was which. It was just getting the names right.
The problem was that the names didn't actually come about until the day before the game, really. Yeah. So that was kind of why I think we didn't have time to get used to calling them that. Also, for a personal note, the average age of the Old School roster was still far too young.
Well, this is a young person's sport. I mean, you can play Ultimate your whole life, but playing in tournaments, which is what you do in club, that is a young person's sport. And playing on the larger field, like you do in MLU, that is also a young person's chase. You know, it's a lot of ground to cover.
And I love the full-size field, but I'm pretty happy that when I go play Summer League, I'm not playing on that.
I would prefer to play Summer League in mini fields.
Oh, can we just literally a 4x4 square?
Yeah. Do you have the throws to play in that sort of environment? I'm not sure.
No. Not in the least. But in this case, so the basic way that the game played out was we had Old School versus New School. They played club rules. So club size field, basic self-officiating, self-refereeing. Club rules, except for they played a timed game, which actually worked out very interesting. So let's first, before we get to that, give me your overall impressions of this game. Because I got to be honest, I went in not knowing what we were going to get
in
terms of an on-field product. Well, partially because I don't watch as much Ultimate as you either. So I've seen a couple women's Ultimate games over the past year or two when I watched them on the, club broadcast games.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen a lot of it. So you have a little bit more background in this. So.
Well, so going into the game, I got a look at the rosters, I was pretty sure we would get a good game. They seemed to split out reasonably well in terms of players that I knew and players that I expected to perform well. And none of those players failed to do so, essentially.
Yeah.
It's a very exciting game. Team Old School went on a run early, mm-hmm. handful of breaks in the first quarter. And they sort of
felt like they may run away with it.
Yeah, they sort of maintained that lead for most of the game. And then it came down to the very end, literally the very end, where Team New School went on a 7-2 run over the last quarter and a half or so. I'm not sure exactly what the timing of where that started in the third quarter. But they got back into the game and started making a few fewer execution errors. And they used their opportunities... To get back into it, and specifically one of the things that I was really pleased with, and we talked about this a little on the broadcast, is how they manage the clock at the end of each quarter. So
because it's not something that they've done or that they've practiced,
and we see some MLU teams fail to manage the clock appropriately at the end of quarters.
They did tell me too that I talked to some of them beforehand about what they thought, and they said that they had actually practiced it a little bit.
Yeah,
in the practice leading up to the game, which whatever they did, MLU teams, coaches out there, give them a call. See what they got down, because they did a great job of this clock management. Well, I'm sure you have stats on this.
Well, not even stats. It's just the examples are at the end of the first quarter ended with Team Old School scoring on a goal from Kara Hammer to Becca Ludford, which left 0 seconds on the clock. So perfect. That's perfect execution.
Yep.
The end of the second quarter, Team New School scored on a throw from Emerson to Hoffman, which ended with 6 seconds on the clock. We thought that was pretty,
pretty
good.
Solid, yeah.
But then Team Old School manufactured a shot at the goal.
That's
with,
right.
And it went off just before the buzzer. So yeah. It didn't count, but they would have had a goal as Allie Heath came down with
just
a disc.
Just after the buzzer.
Right.
Release was just after the buzzer, yeah.
So, and she came down with a goal over two people.
What a catch.
And it ended up not counting, and they figured that out between themselves. Yep. They had a better idea of when the buzzer went off than I did from the booth.
Yeah, we weren't sure what was going on. And I think we were just too busy watching the replay of Allie Heath's catch, which was fantastic.
And then at the end of the third quarter, Schwamm threw a goal to Groom with 4 seconds left again. So they're executing these end of quarter plays very well. And that takes us into the fourth quarter, where Team New School, I keep wanting to call them Young School. This is the same problem I was having.
Yeah. They're Navy New.
So they got a block on the final possession for Team Old School. Liam Hoffman got a block
fantastic
on an underneath
block.
Cut. She was setting it up. It's a
picture-perfect,
like ISO cut from a pull play block. So you set up underneath the player as they come out, and then they just go underneath, and you're basically accelerating even from your run down.
Yep.
Like you're looking at this saying, they're going to throw this
timing
underneath.
Timing
it up. So I'm going to line this up. Got the block, called the timeout, set up with 22 seconds left, I believe. And they called their play, worked the disc across the field, came back across the front, and then they got one last look at the end zone.
They got their shot.
And they put it in, and Kara Hammer comes across the field and makes this incredible catch block, and then loses the disc coming through on the end there. But the receiver went for a clap catch, and the defender went straight for the rim of the disc and came through with it.
Yeah.
And it's just this, it literally came down to the last play with 2 seconds left on the clock.
We almost went to overtime.
I was expecting that we were going to.
I thought we were going to. They worked it so well.
We had that
and
moment.
Even when the throw was up, if you had paused it, I would have said, that's going
to
be
right,
a goal.
Like, so like leading up to it, I was like, oh, this is
going
to
be a goal. But Hammer closed, bid, and just took it away. And it was, what an ending.
And specifically, so we were talking with Luke about this earlier. Luke, the stats guy, I should always... That's his last name.
Luke the stats guy. Luke Ryan.
He was like, he was saying that there was a foul on that last play, and I don't think that there was a foul. I think there was some body contact after the D was made, going to the ground. There wasn't a call on it, which I thought was perfect self-officiation, which you do not always see.
You do not. You often don't see
it
that.
It can
at
be
the
difficult
end of games.
To let that go.
Yeah.
And I was very pleased with the result there. And there were a couple of contested catches here and there throughout the game that I thought they managed pretty well.
Yep.
We weren't always sure what the result was from the booth, which is one of the difficulties of self-officiation. It's hard to communicate up to the people who are not on the field, like up to the stands and up to the people who are watching.
But and I spoke to
they
the,
did a pretty good job. Of
they did a pretty good job. I spoke
out,
to the so. Women on the field too that played in this game, and we think that if we do this again, which I hope we do, that one of the things is, regardless of whether they play with our rule set or whether they play with the club rule set, because there is some interest in trying.
Oh, there should
to play
be. This was fantastic
with the club with the MLU rule set too. But whichever that there would be officials on the field, and whether they're making active calls or whether they're just relaying calls to the audience and to the booth, that kind of is an element that I think is necessary. And that, to me, as well as this game was called and as easy as it was, there wasn't a lot of contention.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very friendly match in a lot of ways. There were still some moments of confusion that I think could easily be
It's just a matter
mitigated.
Of admitting that there are people watching.
Yeah.
And then not necessarily catering to them, but giving, like, helping them watch the game and helping them follow the game.
Catering to them. Yeah. I'm going to go with catering to them. We should cater to them.
are we bringing food in? Is that how this works?
Yeah, send them a smorgasbord. maybe some crudité, a little dip, something nice, you know? Cater.
It's a catered affair.
It's a catered affair. So let's talk about some of the big performers here. Give me a little rundown of your top performers.
Well, so, and for those of you who watch Women's Ultimate, specifically Brute Squad, and even Mixed Ultimate with Wildcard and Slow White, none of these people should be a surprise. So the obvious person that we got comments from, people who were not familiar with Women's Ultimate, they're like, oh, that Cammy Groom is pretty good.
Yeah,
no kidding. You know, like,
she was, you know, sometimes you can have a really good game of Ultimate and your casual observer won't notice.
Yeah.
But there were people passing by in cars on the street outside that were like, man, that Groom, she had a game.
She's primarily a receiver, does a really good job getting open, kind of owns airspace around here very well. One of the guys down on the left end zone as you're facing the field was...
Oh, yeah.
She went up before the players around her were even considering going up. And that's how you can tell that a player is just tuned in, knows where they're getting the dish.
I think she was up there when it was thrown. She was just waiting.
Just waiting.
Just waiting for it.
So she ended up with 4 goals, 4 assists, and 3 blocks. That's fantastic.
That's a good stat line.
And that's,
I'm going to say.
Yeah, and we'll.
I wish I had her in fantasy.
We'll talk about some stat lines later that are very similar to that from the MLU.
Yeah,
players.
There's a couple of big ones out there.
And we mentioned Becky Malinowski a handful of times. 4 goals, 1 assist,
all over the field.
1 block.
That was
the key
about
for her is that she was shifting from behind the disc to in front of the disc, and very frequently after turnovers would happen, it's like that player was just like the person covering her was just playing offense, and she's like, you know what? You're not ready to play defense
yet,
but you have to follow me around.
We're going for a run.
Right. I'm going to take you on a tour of the field.
Yeah.
Would you like to see
all
the cones?
Have you seen this part yet? Yeah. It's lovely over here. Good piece of turf.
And then for team, those they were both for team old school. And then with team new school, we also had Leon Hoffman, who got that game-saving block at the end.
Huge block.
Made a couple catches in the air, made a couple blocks, had 2 goals, 3 assists, 3 blocks. Did very well. And she was also, she was just playing very well. She stood out as a player who was making an impact both offensively and defensively.
Yeah.
And what, like, I could go through a whole list of people here, but I'm just going to stick to 3 more. We had Caitlin O'Connell, 3 goals, 1 block, but I feel like she was more impactful than that as a defender.
Yes.
She was, like, we just noticed her consistently making plays there and covering ground that we weren't entirely sure was going to be covered at different points.
So as an announcer, as a play-by-play guy, I'm pretty inexperienced. I'm trying to find a nice way to say it about myself. Not so great. I don't have a ton of experience, so my calls are very conventional most of the time, and I call what's happening with the disc. But I actually found myself noting her presence away from the disc in a way that I'm not that good at. So it proves how much attention she would grab by the types of defensive setups that she was doing and the way that she was covering people, because I'd be like, oh no, O'Connell just took that one away. And you know, for me as an announcer, that to pull my attention off the thing I'm incredibly worried about screwing up is impressive. So really, really a great player.
And I believe she was also on team new school. And then we had Angela Zhu, who was 44 for 46 on throws during the game for a 95.7% completion. So the fact that you're throwing 46 times per game means you're involved, but the way that she was involved was very useful for her team.
Yeah.
Generally, when a pass would be reset to her, it wouldn't be a long wait or whatever before the next pass went. And generally, when she released the dish, she was giving her thrower an option to give it right back to her. She had a number of inside lefty breaks and was moving the dish very well and presenting easy options for her teammates. And then Allie Heath, as we mentioned earlier, from Team Old School, 2 goals, 1 assist, 4 blocks. And she also had that goal at the end.
Yes.
I think she had a number of other skying plays as well as
being the center handler. She got up for some bailouts on some throws that floated.
Oh, and then she was going to the ground repeatedly to catch things that weren't necessarily thrown all that well. It helps to have length in your handler position. And I think she was the tallest player in the game. And the fact that she was back in handling and then also doing cleanup work in the air and in the ground, like, it was a very strong performance on her part as well.
Yeah, she's a great player. It was great to see her out there too. Yeah, I mean, overall, I really enjoyed the game. And, you know, looking at the game from a business perspective, which is what I have to do too.
As it turns out, the cufflinks
part. It was great. A lot of people turned out for the game and bought tickets and came out.
Yeah.
We had good views on the live stream, you know, really solid views there. And I tell everybody out there, if you care about Women's Ultimate, watch Women's Ultimate, because
in a very basic sense,
more of it will happen. The highlights have done well, and I think
if you just like Ultimate, watch this game. This was a really good game.
We don't have to put a modifier on that. If you like Ultimate, watch Ultimate, and this happens to be Ultimate.
Like good Ultimate,
watch this
one. Watch this one. Really good.
It was excellent. Yeah. So that's good. I mean, it speaks to the idea that this is something that we should be talking to people about doing more often, and that we should be communicating about, and you know, see where that leads. So,
and I hope the players had a good experience too.
So too.
There were a lot of fans out and a lot of crowd involvement, and I really like that. That's an experience that you don't often get in games until you get to like semis, finals at nationals.
Yeah,
playing in front of fans is fun.
And the fans were really good, and it's in a situation where it's kind of hard because they're not actually two different teams.
Right.
Like these are sort of artificially created teams for the purpose of this exhibition. And sometimes it's hard to get fans like up and involved when there's not like a real rooting interest. But I felt like they did that through the quality of their play.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So great game. We can talk a little bit, you know, we should probably move on. We could talk about it a lot, I think, more. There's a lot of details in it, but we should move on because we had some other games this weekend and we didn't have some other games this weekend.
We should cover the not game
first.
We should
probably cover that.
Right,
it's a really tough one to talk about because it made my weekend unhappy.
You weren't the only one.
Immediately after being pretty happy, too.
Right.
You know, I'm pretty happy, and now not so much. So we had, for the first time ever, we had... Well, it's not the first time we've canceled a game, because we did that once in D.C.
Yeah.
Which
was also...
2013?
This was the very first year, yeah.
Yeah, and that was weather-related. Thunder, lightning,
thunder,
hail.
Thunder and lightning. And then we had to leave.
Angry gods
yeah.
descending from the sky.
And we were going up to Boston the next day. It seems like anytime DC is involved, going to Boston, negative things happen.
Yeah, it's not a good thing. So DC's on their way up. The bus suffers a small accident of sorts, but basically knocks off a mirror. They're unable to make a repair on it. The delays happen. They try to get another bus out, but it's New York City, so traffic is terrible. And at the end of the day, they weren't going to be arriving in Boston until almost midnight, and they had a game the next day down in Philadelphia, so we had to make the decision to pull the plug on that game. Very disappointing, and obviously very disappointing. We've refunded a lot of tickets for fans. I'm just thankful that we were able to have such a great game in the women's game and be able to use that stadium that we paid for, because that would have made it even worse to just sit up there in an empty stadium unused.
Purposeless.
We're just watching it just leak money into the ether, because I can see it. I can see money now after all these years. I can see it just disappear. So we had to cancel the game, and that was obviously disappointing.
Well, and it was disappointing for the teams who were trying to get the game in, and which is like playing Frisbee. It was disappointing for the announcers and the rep. Like, that's just the way it works, though.
Yeah, I was going to get to call that game.
The refs were excited about it.
I haven't gotten to call a you know one of our TV broadcasts with you yet.
Right.
Though
we
will be
doing
that
ones.
This weekend. And so that's scary.
Could have used a little warm-up, I suppose.
Matt Gray is super nervous about the game, as I'm telling you right now. there's not much more to say about that game right now. We'll probably have more discussions about it in the future. But that game did not happen.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about, I think as we figure out what that means, we'll talk about some of the lessons that come out of that and what we need to know about it, I think, on a future broadcast. So what did happen? What games did happen?
Oh, I thought I was going to say, well, I got in a van the next morning and drove down to Philadelphia with the video production folks. And that was a fun time. Had a nice brunch.
I was there too. Yeah, the brunch was good.
It was.
Those lentils I had.
So what did it? Right. So we had some other games that actually did happen. San Francisco played up in Seattle, and San Francisco also played in Portland. They ended up with two losses out of the weekend, but they actually had some bright spots in both of those games. Specifically, to start with the Seattle game, which we watched in the hotel on Saturday night.
Yeah, and we got there late, so we picked up the game in the second quarter.
Late second quarter, yeah. And we had been getting Twitter updates and what have you, and we were like, oh, San Francisco's ahead, and they took a 15-9
significantly ahead.
They took a 15-9 lead into half.
Yeah,
and that was just they just played so well and aggressively, as I've gone back and watched since then, and they just didn't make those errors that have been plaguing sort of our bottom four teams. So the two teams in each conference that are out of the playoffs just had these unforced errors all the time.
Yep.
But then they came out in the third quarter and they didn't score a goal in the third quarter, which is really not the way to maintain a lead.
No, that doesn't really do it. It was like they had used all their goals up.
And they only scored three goals for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
So they got three goals in the fourth quarter, zero in the in the third.
It was really a tale of two halves. And I don't know, you know, I haven't watched the game close enough to have a tactical understanding. We watched it in the hotel room while we were decompressing from our disappointing
the Kyle Lowry evening. Phrase.
Yeah. So I haven't watched it incredibly carefully yet. But Seattle clearly made some adjustments at half.
Yeah.
Khalif came out like... he's like, I'm just going to win this game now.
Something has to change.
Yeah, I mean, what was his stat line? Khalif al-Salam was 5 goals, 4 assists, 3 blocks, one of which was a Callahan. It's a nonsense stat line.
Well, it's, you know, the Callahan, and it's the Callahan and one goal. That's the only difference between him and Cammy Groom, right?
That's it. That's actually true. That's the only difference. Fair point. Fair point. But yeah, so they came out, and they just basically just took the game away. Do want to say... Taylor Cassino had a great game, and of course, predicted that game. I'll give you credit. You predicted that he was going to have a great game.
It was the right weekend for him, I felt. Yeah. I just get that feeling sometimes. He's been a quality player for a long time. It kind of goes overlooked a little bit out in San Francisco because Gabe Sankey just continually has these large stat line games.
Oh, yeah.
Taylor plays a little more on the defensive side as well as the offensive side. So if you imagine that San Francisco is going to do well in a game, he's a likely candidate to do well.
And there you go. And so he was your player to watch out there this weekend. And, yeah, 4 goals, 4 assists, 95%, just under 95% completion ratio.
He's got big throws.
He's got some throws.
If the San Francisco Dogfish are going to be scoring on the break side, it's often going to have something to do with Mr. Cassino.
Mr. Cassino. Mr. Cassino. We look forward to seeing more of you, Mr. Cassino.
Well, then we also had San Francisco at Portland, unless you wanted to go back to...
No, San Francisco at Portland.
And again, this is the second time in the season that Portland has been held under 20 points in a game. And both of those times, it has been the Dogfish doing that. So they lost in that game 17-11, and in their previous meeting, they lost to them 18-12. So San Francisco seems to be able to slow down Portland's offense. They don't seem to be able to score many of those breaks, but they're slowing the Stags down, which nobody else has been able to do this entire season.
Yeah, and I think that is something to take note of. If you are Boston or Philadelphia, one of the teams that's going to that championship game, and Portland makes it through this year, you're going to want to take a look at what San Francisco is doing.
And Seattle beforehand is going to have to figure this out as well.
What is San Francisco doing that is slowing that machine down?
Well, one of the theories that Luke, the stat guy, had is that Thomas Pineda is one of the reasons that Timmy Person doesn't have big games against the Dogfish.
Mm.
So it might be a matter of finding someone who can sort of deal with that one-on-one matchup. Maybe. Yeah. Either physically bumping a little bit more or just keeping pace with Purston up and down the field.
See, there's your key to the game. Keep pace with Purston.
Ooh, jeez.
Oh, man, write that down.
The alliteration. this is my writing sound. We'll put this down on here.
Yeah, for those who can't see because they're listening to this podcast, that was the sound of Dusty writing.
It's like Colbert typing.
Yeah. You know, that's the big takeaway from that game. Obviously not a great game again for San Francisco. Portland got that win in the books. They're going to have home field advantage for the playoff game, regardless of what happens this weekend.
Well, this weekend they're just playing against their playoff opponent.
Yeah, it's just a preview. and the other battle for playoff position in the East came down to, especially because of the cancellation in the game, came down to Philadelphia needing a win in one of the last two games against DC.
Yep.
And so they played a game, which you called, they played a game in Philly in the wind, would be a good way of saying it.
Yes.
It was almost more in the wind than it was in Philly.
The wind was present at all points during that game.
Yeah.
Except for maybe 2 or 3 points where it was calm for a moment. And then it just gusted right back up again. It was a gusty wind.
And it would die and then come back.
So, yeah. I mean, DC made a game of it. They got down early to Philadelphia. And then DC made a 6-2 run in the second quarter.
Kind of game.
And then Philadelphia just pulled away in the second half. The thing for me in this game, the thing that illustrates just how windy it was, first is the very first throw of the game. where Dave Baer catches the throw and is kind of hopping towards him. So, you know, he's got to think about it whenever. And then he steps out to throw a backhand on the very first pass and throws it very low, points the nose up from the ground
just
a little
a
bit.
Titch.
And it just goes skyward immediately.
Straight up in the air. We almost had a first point Callahan.
Kevin Healy gets down on it. And if he had known that the throw was going to be that bad, he probably would have run down even harder with the intent of catching that floaty pass for a score. But it's that play, and then there were so many pulls downwind that went out of bounds in that game.
Oh, you were so frustrated.
Game. And I couldn't, I can still barely contain my frustration. Yeah, well, what they did is they started just throwing it down, throwing rollers downwind. And it's this thing where I wanted them to, they weren't even trying for those magnificent pulls going downwind. They were just throwing it hard and in the direction with the wind, and it was just sailing out the back. And both teams did this. I feel like there were four or five consecutive downwind, straight out the back pulls.
Yep.
So why not try something crazy? Throw it way out, have it sit back across, and then maybe you'll be all the way down there. If you're risking pulling it out of bounds anyway, maybe try something wild. Maybe throw a big blade the other direction and see how that sits. I don't know.
Yeah, you talked about it on the broadcast. It was funny.
I'm still palpably
frustrated. You get so frustrated with this, and I was standing next to you watching you be frustrated, and it was almost like, and this is going to be a weird metaphor, but I'm going to do it. It was almost like watching a father get a really painful shot while his kid's sitting there, and he doesn't want his kid to be afraid of shots, so he's trying not to show how painful it is.
Well, it's,
and for you, you were just, you're like, you know you can't yell at the players.
I'm not allowed to throw things at them.
You're not allowed to throw things at them. You can't run down to the field and physically assault them. And you can see you trying to contain all those desires, especially after a late night and a long bus ride and sitting in the sun. Well,
this is a challenge for me as an announcer, and we talk about this, is that Ultimate is frequently a game of mistakes.
Yeah.
So it's the errors that make the difference in the game, and I try not to be totally negative all of the time, which is also a little difficult for me as a relating to sports. And this was one of those moments where I had to contain it so I wasn't boiling over during the broadcast.
Yeah, yeah, and it's... To, I think a lot of casual observers seems like such a small thing, but it's certainly, you did a good job of making a point of how important it actually is.
It was 40 yards. Because
that team has to work their way upfield, and you're giving them 40 yards of that distance. And in a game like that, where it's so hard to get upfield, that's not great.
And Matt Esser was just in the office today, and he mentioned, well, my downwind pulls were pretty good. I was like, yeah, because you just threw them low and at the ground.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, well, at least they had to complete pass. It's like, I know. I agree with you. You did do better, but.
Yeah. No, he definitely did better, and he's not going to be shy about telling you that.
Never has been and shouldn't be.
So in the end, yeah, Philly ended up pulling away very far in the fourth quarter.
They ended
it's
up
not really reflective of how close the game was through the first three quarters, but I think it is reflective of the type of team Philly is this year. They're a much better team, a much stronger team than they've ever been, and they can finish games in a way that they struggled with. Even at the beginning of this year, they kind of struggled in later quarters, but they've gotten rid of some of that.
Figured out how to go on runs as a defensive team, and that makes such a big difference. All of the teams in the playoffs do that, is they figure out these moments where they can make a bunch of breaks against the opponent. They ended up with a 24-16 win, Philadelphia over D.C., and I think that was the first time during the season that any teams had scored three consecutive breaks, four goals against Philadelphia the entire season.
Mm.
And DC did that during the second quarter. So they showed a way, and maybe it's just to have enough wind, but there is a way to do it.
Here's a way to beat Philly.
Wind.
they did.
It's a start.
Yeah, no, it is a start. And so Philly gets home field advantage. So we're looking at, you know, we still have another week of games, and these are going to be interesting. But just to jump ahead really quickly, playoffs. In Portland, Saturday, the 25th, and then in Philadelphia on Sunday, the 26th. Both games will be on MLU Live. Of course, you can get tickets and go to these games, which you should, because the Philly-Boston game is going to be a barn burner, and we've seen what's happened the last 2 years to Portland in that playoff game.
No safety at home.
No safety at home. Get out there and find out if they can get this away from Seattle this time. And enjoy the game. On the live stream if you can't make it, because it's going to be great. But we still have a weekend to go. And there's some interesting storylines in this weekend.
For sure.
So Vancouver and San Francisco are playing.
And, well, first we've got San Francisco currently has the longest losing streak in MLU history at eight games.
Ooh.
So they could extend that record to 9 games if they want to put a stranglehold on longest losing streak.
Yeah, they just want to own that record.
Just want to put your name in the record book somewhere.
That's probably not the one you want, though.
But both those two teams, they're 1 and I guess it adds up to 8. So that's 9 games and one more. So they're 1-8, and their only wins have come against each other. Yeah. So they both have the opportunity to win the season series against their opponent and then have a winning record against an opponent over the course of the season.
Mm.
So it's an important game for both of them. They've had struggles up and down during the course of the season. We've seen bright spots for both of those teams over the season, both in games and in individuals and in quarters here and
there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But they've got to be looking at this game and saying, okay, this is our last shot.
Yep.
This is the last chance that we have to not be last in the West, essentially. So I expect that game to be... I expect both those teams to be coming out of the gate on fire. And then it's sort of who can maintain this and who can...
What do you have to lose?
You're fighting for not last. And that is a significant thing. You're fighting to be the team that is 2-8 at the end instead of 1-9. 1-9 is a record that I believe only the Portland Stags have finished with thus far in LU.
That's true. I forgot about that.
So then I expect that to... I don't necessarily expect it to be chippy, but I expect it to be contentious.
Yep. I would agree. I'm looking forward to watching it.
And then we've got Seattle versus Portland in the West.
Seattle versus Portland. Preview of the West Coast playoff.
But preview of what?
That's what's going to be interesting.
What do you pull out in this game? What do you show your opponent the week before you have to play them again?
See, the game doesn't really matter... other than just for pride.
Which matters. I mean, I'm not saying any of these players
I always want to win. And it matters for Cody Bjorklund. I told you earlier, I was looking at the MLU records page. So you can all go look at this, MLUltimate.com/records. And it's a little bit of a long shot, but if he can put 10 points together, he can tie for the season point record.
So that's goals plus assists.
Goals plus assists. He already has the assist record. He has 37 assists. so he's got that handled. 37 assists this year. But he could actually, assists. he could put his name in another position on there and extend that assists lead that he has. So that'll be a fun thing to see in the game. Keep an eye on Cody and see if he puts that together. I don't know how as a coach do you approach this game?
Personally, I would approach this game the sort of the same way that DC approached one of these games in 2014 when they were essentially already in the playoffs. Didn't really mean anything. They were playing against Philadelphia, and they just had random groups of players out there together. It was sort of like nobody played that many points. Nobody played, and I think they had a game the next day as well, but nobody played that much. They tried some things out. They did some different whatevers. But you just don't want to tip your hand too much if you're either team. To be fair, Portland doesn't really change their strategy, as far as I can tell, over the last 3 seasons. So I don't expect to see anything too much different from them. Seattle has had a bunch of different looks on defense in some years. They've had a couple different looks on offense in terms of who they run their offense through and what they're looking for. So as a coach, you just don't want to show too much, but you don't want to get out of practice with your team.
Yeah. Well, if you talk to Seattle about last season, when they came into Portland and beat Portland to go to the championship game, they will tell you that they had been developing a strategy to beat Portland the entire season and did not use it until that game.
But now they've used it.
Yeah, so what is their new strategy? Because you know, those rainmakers, they're a little sneaky.
Whereas, as far as I could tell, Portland's just like, hey, this is what we got, and we don't think you could stop it.
Yeah, they have some swagger, right? And Seattle has, both teams have great coaching staffs, but we've seen amazing things out of Seattle's in terms of that strategy and that, you know, the tactics that they use. And I would expect, as you said, for this game to be fun, because these are two great teams, but cautious in some ways.
Or possibly it'll be overly, you know, sort of huck happy.
It might just be loose.
Player's just like, yeah, whatever. We're just going to run out and have a good time. Like, yeah, I don't know.
It might be just show offy. Like, let's get the crowd in. Let's get them excited. You could be right. So we'll see. We're going to take a look at that. And then on the East Coast.
Grudge matches.
Yeah, Philly down to D.C. D.C., I was talking to the coaching staff at D.C., and they're like, look, we knew that this year was a rebuilding year in a lot of senses. We have a 3-year plan in place for where we want to win the championship in 2018. So they want to get to a point where they can contend for the championship in 2018. They of course love to do it next year, but they're trying to be measured about the way they do player development and the types of players that they're bringing into their system, right? But one of their goals for this year was to beat each team once and
win in every city.
Yeah, and they want to beat Philadelphia pretty badly. Philly.
Well, they definitely want to beat Philadelphia pretty badly.
Yeah. Philly, while they don't need this game in any particular sense, and while they will be sitting a couple of players, like Esser, who we were talking about, and Jack Casey, and Charlie McCutchen, because all three of those players have two bans.
Yow.
So if they pick up another ban in this game, they'd be out for the playoff game. So I don't even think they're letting Esser come to the stadium.
He did say that, yeah. Although I think he walked back for a little bit.
They're leaving him at home.
Draymond Green style.
Yeah. So as long as he doesn't make any phone calls. No. So they're going to play a little bit more cautious with some of their players, I'm sure. Probably play a little bit of a deeper lineup.
And I'm sure DC is just going to be going after them. It's just that you can tell the frustration with DC. They want each one of these games so badly, and they just don't get them.
Yeah, they have such
they have the hunger,
athletes,
and they just have the like the
such
desire.
A hunger for
it.
I love their team dynamic. Like, I just think it's a really great team. When I, even in this bad situation where they didn't make it to the game in Boston, like the morale of the team and their kind of like togetherness was phenomenal.
Played a lot of wiffle ball.
They played a lot of wiffle ball. Played like 6 hours of wiffle ball. So yeah, that'll be a fun game. And then we have New York, Boston. Boston knows that they didn't get to play this game this past weekend, and they're going to want to go out there and put on a show for their fans who have really supported them so well this year. They've had great crowds up there, and there's going to be a lot of people coming to that game who had tickets for the last game, and we're of course honoring those tickets at the next game. So there'll be people coming back out, and I think the Boston team knows that they deserve to see a good game. So
there's that, and the flip side of that is that this thing where Boston just believes they can beat New York in club and in MLU and everywhere, it just weighs on New York in a way.
Yeah.
They're just like, I want to be done with this. I want to beat them. I want to beat them so badly. And then the thing is, neither of those teams has anything to lose, but one team has to prepare for a game the next week, whereas the other team can just sort of, like, if they wanted to, they could play their top line every single point of the
game.
They
could just
see what happens.
Yeah, they can throw it out there.
So they can try whatever they want. They can get a little huck happy if they want, put the disc up to guys like Mott, who we've seen jump over people and whatever.
Love it.
So anything could happen with that New York team who's just scrambling to get that victory against Boston.
Yeah, and they could have a chance to do it. I mean, as you said, Boston needs to have some degree of caution in preparing to play the very next weekend in that big playoff game. We're also going to keep an eye on Marcus Brownlee during this game because he
blocks
is four blocks away from the block record, which is Rob Baker's.
He's at 19 right now, so you could tie it with four.
He could tie it with four. Yeah, he could tie Rob Baker with four. Rob Baker sits at 23 blocks.
So maybe he'll get a block against Rob Baker.
Oh man, that's something to watch for.
Maybe the New York offense will just start giving the disc back to Boston so that they can attempt to get Brownlee more blocks.
I love it. Yeah.
Stuff the stat sheet.
I'm in. Just keep throwing it back. I don't know. It'll be a fun game. And all these games are on MLU Live, MLULive.com. And watch them. Go to them. Do all the things you're supposed to do. Oh. I'll be down in DC.
Yeah,
we're going to call a game.
It's going to be all right.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Got to give the before we forget here. I got to give my shirt a shout out.
Beautiful.
This
shirt
is from the Pike 2009 collection.
Yeah,
which is when it was the last
branding
time.
Got a lot better.
It's the last
I played.
It's the last time Pike went to nationals. The last year Pike existed. It was a very exciting year. We had a lot of fun. And these were our wear-in shirts.
Wear-in shirts.
So
we never had wear-in shirts.
Get those to just hang around in down in the Sarasota heat. We had some
golf in that shirt.
A lot of the players from that team are still hanging around the MLU playing and being involved at high level ultimate. So I was pretty pleased with how all that went. There was a really young team. we had a lot of a lot of college players who were dealing with their college seasons as the club season was ramping up towards nationals. So big shout out to Pike 2009. They made me believe in winning when I had given up on winning at regionals. So that was a lesson that I appreciated being taught.
Oh, I love, you know me, love Pike, way back in the day. The last thing we're going to talk about before we get out of here is the elephant in the room, or the big silver shiny thing in the room, we should say.
Yeah,
oh, it's back there. Those of you listening rather than watching are both wise for avoiding 30 to 40 minutes of Dusty and I's faces, but also are missing the shiny MLU trophy that's behind me. One little note about the trophy that I'm attempting to fix this year is there's never been a very good way of attaching that disc to the top of it. It was a design flaw in my original designs of this trophy. And as a result, every time people win and are holding that up over their head, shaking it around and jumping, I am standing there with like just a lump in my throat, waiting for the disc to fall off and knock somebody on the head. Because it's a not heavy light. Disc. None of it is light. None of that trophy is light. This year, we're going to do some work. We're going to fix that. But the championship game, you should come to Philadelphia for this game. We're getting some hotel deals in place. There's lots of cool ways to come. It's going to be at Franklin Field in Philadelphia on the University of Pennsylvania's campus. It's going to be on July 16th. The game's going to start at 5 p.m., but there's going to be a bunch of other stuff going on that day. So go to MLUChampionship.com, MLUChampionship.com, and you get the full scoop and skinny and all those sort of other words that mean the same thing.
And we'll see if somebody can remove that Whitecap scarf from the trophy.
Yeah, somebody's got to take that off.
They're the reigning champions, and they're starting to get that championship feel. They've been improving over the course of the season, putting some pieces together.
They've gotten better and better. Philly has a tough game ahead of them this next weekend. And then, yeah, we'll either see Boston-Seattle, Boston-Portland, Philly-Seattle, or Philly and Portland. And
those are all the correct teams.
Those are all the teams.
All those teams have earned their playoff spots.
Absolutely. And whatever game we get out of that is going to be fantastic. So come to Philly and watch the game.
Again, slight rooting interest for Portland. That way we will have all four Western Conference teams
all
have been
four
to the championship.
We'll make it to the championship. That is that would be really cool. Yeah. So we'll give Portland a little bit of a like, go Portland, but I still really...
I'm not anti-Rainmakers. It's just a contextual thing that I would like.
I love hanging out with the Rainmakers guys too at the after party. So, you know, either way though, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I was busy writing during the after party.
Yeah, that was... Yeah,
got more work to do.
That's just foolish. So we will talk a lot more about this championship game as we go forward, but for now, July 16th, Franklin Field in Philadelphia, also, of course, available on MLULive.com. Going to be an exciting match. That is all the time we have for today, and then some.
Certainly.
But always enjoyable, Dusty. Had a great time here today.
Happy to be here.
Pike 2009 forever. Wearing shirts.
Wearing shirts.
Wearing shirts.
That's what's up.
And you can get me at Nick Darling on Twitter, N-I-C Darling, or you can get Dusty Rose at DustTweeter, D-U-S-T-W-E-E-T-R.
Boom.
You can get both of us at Cleats Cufflinks. Tune in to MLU Live this coming weekend for all the games, all the action. And we'll see you next time on Cleats and Cufflinks.